It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Wait, has it been 2 years?
Consequence Podcast Network.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence, the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here. Check out the series. You know what to do. Like what you see, what you hear. Hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week. New one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. iTunes, Apple Podcast, Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Susanna Hoffs. Going to be catching up with the Bangles co-founder about a lot of things. She's got a brand new album called The Deep End. This finds her covering folks like Billie Eilish, Joy Ladykin, Brandi Clark, and produced by Peter Asher. She also has a new book. That's called The Bird Has Flown. As she'll tell us, it's about a one-hit wonder type of story. And in fact, that book has already been optioned for a movie that she's deep into the script for. She's finished the script already. So we're talking new album, new book, and upcoming movie as well. Let's jump right into this. It's Kyle Meredith with Susanna Hoffs.
Hello.
Well, let me say it is great to see you again. Great to hear already a new record with the Deep Ends. And the book that's coming out, I mean, by the way, most of the time when an artist is writing a book, they don't have time for an album.
I know.
What's going on over there?
So, okay, I have to reconstruct the timeline. I was working on the book for many years. It was an absolute labor of love. It was kind of something I'd wanted to do my whole life because I love reading and I loved being inside of stories, whether in a movie, a song, a book. I'd always dreamed of doing it. And a few years back, I was just talking with my husband and kids about it. And my older son, Jackson, said, "Mom, what are you waiting for? Just do it." So I just, on my own, kind of quietly was working for years on this novel. And it was an unexpected pleasure. I'd never studied writing. It's like with music. I've always been self-taught with music as well. I don't actually read, can't read a chart. It's like a dirty little secret, but I guess I let that into the universe now. But the same with writing. I just learned from books that I loved, and loving story, loving being inside of a story. It's escapist for me. I can escape my ruminations about my own life and just disappear into somebody else's journey. So I just took the plunge, as they say, straight into the deep end. The album title is based on this incredibly, incredibly beautiful Holly Humberstone song, but it all fit with the story of both the novel and, you know, how I remember throwing myself in the early 80s, when I was fresh out of university at UC Berkeley, and I was like, this is what I want to do. And I was going to see Patti Smith and the Sex Pistols and Winterland Ballroom. And I was so psyched about music. And so same thing. I just threw myself into the deep end and hoped that I could figure out how to stay afloat.
It's interesting how it works together. So the deep end is the record. The Bird Has Flown is the book. And they tell you to write what you know. And that's sort of what you did here, right? So, I mean, as I understand, we're talking about, the tagline goes, it's sort of a one-hit wonder story.
Yeah, it's a one-hit wonder set in the present, the present, the now, because I was writing it all through the pandemic. But and so I didn't want the story to be like set in the pandemic, just to clarify. I just started to kind of dream up the story, and kind of using some favorite books from my childhood, like Jane Eyre, which I revisited over and over again. And there's a book, Rebecca, by Daphne du Maurier, that has a similar theme. Can the ghosts of our past, you know, will they always haunt us? Will we be able as human beings to kind of break through and find joy and connection in life? And so her journey as the character is that she had a big hit that was written by somebody else when she was 23. And now we find her at 33, kind of descending an elevator to do what's called a private gig, which most people aren't familiar with private gigs, but she's been asked to perform at a bachelor party in Vegas, which she has, you know, a little bit of trepidation about. And she, you know, she's kind of been off the radar for a while, and she's put on the mini skirt and she's worn the costume, and you know, it kind of just goes from there. And we see her sort of unexpectedly put on a plane to London because of the good graces of her longtime manager, who could tell that she's barely staying afloat, you know, with grappling with the failure of her career and a recent very devastating breakup. And then she meets this stranger on a plane, and I'll let the readers who want to go on their own journey with the book take it from there. But so I was able to use my experiences as a musician and also a person in the music business, which are two different things in my mind, and also write a book about love and connection and what matters and in life is from my point of view. And it couldn't have been more escapist and fun for me. That's the thing. It was many hours, what I call in the chair writing, but I enjoyed it all the way through.
It's interesting, you know, the subject that you take, because it's almost like a bit of the possibility of an alternate timeline for your own life. I mean, you're not a one-hit wonder. You did have someone else. You did have a hit that someone else wrote.
Yeah.
You know, and then it diverges from there. So what kept you from also writing your own story, and whether that's a memoir or something even closer to that?
That's interesting. I mean, songs are more memoir-esque. In a sense, I always approach songs there's some great storytellers, songwriters, you know, Paul Simon comes to mind, for example. And the stories aren't necessarily his own stories, but some often they are, but sometimes they're not. Or Bruce Springsteen, or, you know, so many artists. But it's possible that a memoir will be in the works down the line. It's not something I'm focusing on now that I've discovered the joy of writing fiction, like literally playing with dolls, like the characters are like dolls, and the whole unfolding process of how I discovered how to write a novel. I never expected to honestly find myself in this very moment, because I was so where I have this novel coming out and very soon on Little Brown, which is the most wonderful imprint to be on. I mean, I just love the people there. My editor's great. I mean, I think it's a challenge now for me to take on writing solo music, maybe, perhaps. Although I do love collaborating when it comes to music.
And we'll be right back right after this.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome back. Kyle Meredith with Susanna Hoffs.
I have the new album coming out, The Deep End, and that came out of the blue because I was so ensconced in writing the novel. I got a message from my longtime tour manager that Peter Asher wanted to make music with me. And this was like in the deep, deep throes of the pandemic, when I was really blue in that moment. I remember feeling like hopeless, honestly, about music somehow. That even the fact that there was no way to play live, there was no way to sit in a room and write a song and feel the energy of that, which is different from Zoom. And also Zoom, you can't have two people. It didn't work. Zoom wasn't a format that we could really collaborate on music, as it turns out. So getting that call, it was like, sun shines through the rain, you know, like it was crazy. And then it was before the vaccine. So as soon as we'd had gotten through that spring enough to be vaxxed, I started to make these treks weekly by, you know, a couple times a week to Malibu, where Peter lives. And it was just so fun to sit in a room with a guitar in my lap, testing out various songs and ideas. And because I was so busy also multitasking with the book, again, I just, you know, drifted towards finding songs that fit, you know, that like putting on a dress, trying on a shoe. You just know in your throat when you sing it, you know almost instantaneously with the song if it's going to fit. But, you know, I did three covers records with Matthew Sweet. Elvis and Sinatra, they are not viewed as cover singers because they never, as far as I know, Elvis always sang other people's songs, as did Frank Sinatra, as did many, many artists. But now in this day and age with so many incredible singer-songwriters and bands that, you know, are all about the writing, they've become more categorized, like, this artist is a covers artist. I don't think of myself that way, but yeah, it was a joyful thing. And then to have the band that played on the records that informed my journey as a singer, artist, Linda Ronstadt's Heart Like a Wheel record was so influential. So to be working with Russ Kunkel and Leland Sklar, Danny Korchmar, Waddy Wachtel, it was amazing, amazing during the pandemic, bubbling up with those guys and recording an insane amount of songs in a very short period of time. They're so good.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, we're talking about Peter Asher and all the history he carries, those musicians and all the history they carry. But with a few exceptions, these are all pretty much newer songs, newer artists that you've done. It's not, you know, you think of that and you're like, oh, everybody's going to like, and, you know, we talked about that on your last record too. A lot of that was going back to your past. This looks like the exact opposite of that. It's capturing something in the present. What led you in that direction?
Just a desire to connect with new artists out there. And Peter is someone who is always discovering new artists. Like he has a really great you know, sort of method for just searching around to see what's going on. I partly because I've been so ensconced in writing the novel, I have like these playlists on my phone that did inform a lot of the writing on the book and are also just, you know, songs are the beginning, middle, and end of every day for me. Like my morning walk, I score with music and it would affect the writing actually. But Peter has a great practice of just figuring out what's happening right now. And so he was the one who turned me on to, of course I knew of Billie Eilish, but he was, I think he might've pitched that specific song. And also Holly Humberstone and the Joy. And I
Roy Ladekin. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you, I always put the syllable on the wrong right. You know, that phrase. So I get the wrong emphasis. Yeah. But Joy's song. And it was really kind of crazy because she and I had a little text exchange and I had no idea that she was a Bengals fan. I just, because Peter Asher turned me on to her music, I just was utterly entranced and smitten with her writing and singing and just blown away. And then we had this fun little exchange. And then actually she sent me something to sing background vocals on. And, you know, it established a friendship there again during the pandemic when it was so isolating of a time. These connections with other musicians and artists was just so, like, it really was like could turn my mood around on a dime, just being connection, you know? So at a time when we were all so isolated.
First off, I assume everybody is a Bengals fan, so I would never be surprised in that myself. But too, I mean, she really has, I feel like Joy has turned into, even in that time, one of the most important songwriters of this era and what she's writing out there. Yeah, it's incredible.
It's so incredible. And I'm so happy for her. And she deserves every bit of accolade that she's getting. And, you know, it's just wonderful to connect with a new group of brilliant artists making amazing stuff. So, yeah, that was just a great gift. And I'm so grateful to Peter for kind of, you know, sharing all of his discoveries.
And Holly, as you mentioned, and Brandi Clark and the Billie song, I thought was actually interesting. And, you know, you've got Ed Sheeran in there too. And I'm only, as we're talking about genres, probably unfairly as I say this, you know, they're more in the pop world than some of these other singer-songwriters are. But like Billie's song, it feels like that's a different energy, specifically that song, not as an artist, but a different energy to tap into. Yet you still make it in this cohesive thing that sounds great with the rest of the album. It doesn't sound like an outlier that maybe I would have thought it would. Like, what was that part of the conversation?
Well, one thing that just crossed my mind as you were saying that was that it wasn't something we went in knowing we would do this, but we basically ended up with having this wonderful string quartet play on pretty much every song. I think actually on every song. It started out like, ooh, let's get them for the one. Oh, maybe they should do this one. And I'm quite convinced that the string quartet plays on every single song. So it became kind of, because I had this affection for Baroque folk and pop music of the 60s, and I actually named my little record imprint Baroque Folk because of that, but it sort of stuck as a theme just through my life, that I think because when I was a little kid growing up and you're always in the car and the radio, the AM radio at the time, I don't even think there was FM radio in the 60s here, but there was a lot, for some reason, it would always prick up my ears when there'd be a little harpsichord or like an oboe on a Sonny and Cher song. And even my kids report to me now that when I would take them to school and we'd do the drives, I would always kind of remark on, check out that bass line, whether it was in like Ramble On, Led Zeppelin song or something, some piece of the arrangement would always tickle my fancy. Is that an expression? It seems really old fashioned.
That's an expression.
Yeah. And it was something about, I mean, we have like a lot of eclectic instruments on the record. It was something actually David Kahn, who produced the first two Bangles records, he was a terrific arranger and often thought to throw in. And David Segerson too. You know, most of the producers I've worked with have had a really great ear for arrangement and sensibility for arrangement. So, but I do owe some of that to my connection to my little girl self growing up in the 60s. And I mean, I love the movies of the 60s and 70s. That those eras have informed a lot about the art that I've made.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, Kyle Meredith with Susanna Hoffs. You cover Coconut Records, Jason Schwartzman.
Oh, yeah.
He comes from that world a lot, too. I mean, that's where he's pulling from. So it's interesting that you, or are you all, I mean, I know you're in the same area. Are you all actually friends?
I mean, we're friends. I mean, I haven't spent that much time. And Robert does, his brother Robert does a lot of documentaries with my friend Rick Krim. So, but the Schwartzman family grew up in the same neighborhood as I did. I just sent a clip, a YouTube clip, to a friend in England on the day that the Beatles came to our block in Brentwood. And the Schwartzman family lived just down the street. And it was actually on their block, I don't know if it was their house at the time, that the Beatles went to some sort of event when they were in town to do the Hollywood Bowl shows. And so I've always, and also Jay worked with John Schwartzman, who's a DP. I've had a connection, sort of a loose connection to their whole clan for a long time. So getting to meet Jason at the studio when he came to listen to what we'd done with his music was really, really a treat. And one of the best parts of it was that at the end of West Coast, I think, the song West Coast, there's a little drum thing of like playing the ride cymbal that I heard in my head, because it's at the end of Dusty Springfield's Son of a Preacher Man. If you ever listen through, get to the end, there's this little drum thing that happens, that every time I've ever listened to that song, I kind of do a joy dance when that comes on. And it was such a great moment when I had asked Peter, can we add this thing? And I played him Son of a Preacher Man. It took forever to get to the song that day. I was like, wait for it. There it is. And so we did it. And then Jason immediately goes, I love that thing of the ride on the bell at the end. And Peter looked at me and smiled. He goes, that was Sue's idea. It felt so validated. Not that I needed to be, but it was like that he heard that and loved it. It made me feel like, yay.
The thing that you've loved for so long now, it's, yeah, as you say, the validation, it's there.
It on the record, and Jason was happy about it on his song.
Those small moments, I mean, we've all got those with our favorite songs. Those small moments you think no one else is realizing what that little thing is right there. And it means that those come to mean so much.
So much.
Yeah.
So
I love
much.
That. And there are a couple parts on here I was going to bring up, because you do Black Coffee in Bed. Another one of the greatest songs of all time from Squeeze. And also with Yazoo on there. And by the way, the French horn on Only You. Speaking of great musical moments, I think it's French horn, whatever that is, but oh, what a great moment of that track right there too.
I know. It's one of those things where you just feel like it goes from two-dimensional to three-dimensional, you know, because it's like becomes suddenly cinematic. And that's something that was so fun working with Peter. It was like anytime one of us would sit in the room and go, what about this? What about that? And then it would be like asking for the moon and getting it, you know, like it just was crazy. I don't know. It was so fun. And I just, yeah, I can't wait to, you know, do more interviews like this where we can talk about it, because it's been such a crazy, busy time. So it's great.
Yeah. Now, those moments are all throughout there. And even like, you know, I was thinking like with those two bands specifically, with Yaz and Squeeze, you know, you have the newer artists and you have the classic artists. And then those are what I would have guessed would have been your contemporaries in your earliest days, you know, yeah. Especially with the way you've done Black Coffee in Bed, because now it's gone from, I mean, it's, what did I write down? Blue Eyed New Wave Soul. Like it's all sort of there. Is, I don't know, is it, because a great song's a great song, but is it different when it's sort of your contemporaries? Do you, does it feel any different with, you know, the song or how you approach it, your relationship?
Wow, that's such a good question. I feel like every time that I want to, I mean, this was the case with Matthew Sweet, by the way. I mean, as we've discussed, singing other people's songs has been part of my entire life. Even in the Bangles, one of the ways that we figured out how to be a band and even to write together was we covered a lot of songs that we loved. All our club shows were just 60s songs that were like kind of on. I've now been connected with Lenny Kaye recently on email, and from Patti Smith's group, you know, obviously, but his Nuggets albums. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've got them right over the screen here.
There you go. Were so important in my life. So to your question about taking on my contemporaries from the 80s songs, right? These were songs that I loved so much, and bands and artists that I worship, that they are not only part of, they're part of those memories for me of the 80s, but it was such a heady time being on tour, and just that whole decade was the Bangles for me, you know, that first experience of being in a band and being on Columbia Records and touring constantly and having occasion from time to time to meet some of these peers / idols, that it was really exciting to kind of revisit that time period and do our own spin on it, and to sing songs that anytime they come on the radio, I'm singing along to. So it was like very natural. And I'd always put that high harmony. Whenever I hear Only You, I always just sing that harmony to it. And for years, I was like, I really should record this and do that harmony. So I had my chance.
I'm really glad you did. It's and there's so many highlights on it. And then I could go on to see the swagger that you bring to See You Don't Mind and the bounce that's there. I love that one. Of course, Under My Thumb is out there as a single, and what you're doing with that. It really is. This is such a fun album. And I can't wait to dig into the book as well. And I've heard that you've already signed the movie rights. So this is,
I've already written the script.
Wow.
I've been maybe unhealthily busy. I don't know. I'm smiling my way through it, because each thing is just like, wait, I get to do this. Now I get to do that. This is so wonderful. Yeah. So during the last year to couple of years, all of these pieces of the puzzle started falling into place. And very early on, even before I started doing the editing process with my wonderful editor at Little Brown on the manuscript, on the novel, there was interest from the film world, because, you know, they get sent manuscripts really early on. And I had the great fortune of two women, Bruna Papandrea and Liza Chasen, who have made some of my favorite movies and television shows. They actually work separately from often, but they, from time to time, they join forces to produce a project, and they jumped on board. Universal jumped on board, and it was all so fast that I didn't know what was happening. I was like, wow, it was one good thing after another, you know? And so, as I said, yeah, I've written the screenplay. I've been bouncing back, but the apart from the record being kind of its own universe, the book and the movie are, you know, it's an adaptation of the novel. So it was really quite, the story was in my mind, the characters, I know them, I feel like they're my friends. So their voices, I know, yeah, it was really fun to write the screenplay.
Do you have the casting in your head, the wish list?
I have a lot of casting ideas. Even when I was writing the book, I would just look at pictures of different actors, sort of like, even before I knew the movie thing was happening, I just like to look at faces, you know, and just dream of like, well, maybe one day there'll be a film version of this, and who would play Tom, and who would play Jane, and who would play Pippa, and who would play Will and Freddie, and all the characters in the book. So it was fun to kind of collect little, like a mood board kind of, you know?
Yeah, I'm hoping that we're about to get into a really good era, maybe for, you know, the music movie, the rock and roll movie. Daisy Jones is out there, and I've been so captivated by that. I've been so much in that world right now. And as I've said before, because I had Scott Neustadter on here talking recently, and we were, because he's screenwriter, showrunner, and I said it's so hard to make a movie or a television series that's actually true, you know, to what it's like to be a musician. Like it I don't know why, but it seems like it's hard, and I feel like they pulled it off, and I imagine that, you know, because you are in this world, that it's, that you can pull this off too, but that's not the easiest thing somehow to bring that to screen.
No, and I really in the working on the editing of the book, I have internalized the process of stepping onto a big stage, and your heart's beating, you fear the audience can hear it, you know, like you're so, you have to kind of become this other person in that moment. You have to take your just daily life, mishigas, to use an Yiddish expression, but in just fucking, you know, bring it, you know, bring it on, or, you know, like unleash the other person inside of you who has the sass and the, I don't know, to do something like that, to just start freaking playing and singing and lighting up the stage in some way, you know, bringing that energy. And yes, it's really hard to do it. That's one of the fun things that I'm going to be getting into with my screen adaptation of the concert scenes, you know, and yeah. And even the struggle to write a song is very hard to portray. I've just reached out to Taylor Jenkins Reid on Instagram. And so now we're going to get together, I think even tomorrow. But it was so fun because I'm such a fan of her book and I've just started another one of her books, and the show. And wow, it's been so fun to get to know other authors, but also people who write about music. There's like a subgenre in literature about people who write about, I just met Nick Hornby recently. I'm starting to meet all these authors who, I don't know if you even call it a subgenre, but, you know, obviously, and you know, Cameron Crowe did such good, he was so inside the scene that Almost Famous is one of the great,
like, that's the crowning, that's the number one rock movie for, like, it's hard to beat that, you know.
Well, I'll tell you the one that the thing that I always say to people when they say, like, what's it like being in a band, and I always say, watch Spinal Tap, honestly. Spinal Tap, I mean, and my character is a one hit wonder. I know what it's like to have ups, and I know what it's like to have downs, and nobody cares when you put out a record too, you know? So it's just Spinal Tap, or you walk on a stage and everything's wrong, nothing's working, and you're trying to be like a showman and pretend the show must go on, you know, but it's Spinal Tap is a must see for anyone who wants to see rock, a great example of an accurate rock and roll story.
It's one of the greats for a reason. I hope that all of you all start some kind of Algonquin roundtable at some points, all you musical authors. That would
There's an author that I've just met also recently, Emma Straub, who wrote a great book called Modern Lovers. I love it. And there's a cat in it called Iggy Pop. There's like a whole, I'm just starting to find, you know, my compadres in this genre.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I can't wait for all of it to come out. I'm seriously, you know, I'm such a fan of what you do. I love what you do. And The Deep End is so much fun to listen to. Susanna, it's always so great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Till next time.
Till next time. I can't wait till we do this again.
Yes.
And my thanks to Susanna Hoffs. You can jump further into my series and find some of our previous interviews in here as well. Just search for Kyle Meredith with Susanna Hoffs. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Before you get out of here, I do hope you hit that subscribe button. Again, it's 3 new interviews every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to keep you up to date on your favorite artists. And discover the new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith with. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. All three of them, the address is at Kyle Meredith. So do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Time is a construct. That
it's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.